That's better.
I feel my heart start to tremble and whenever you're
don't think you could hit those notes. This is when that little camera for the studio is going to come in really handy.
I can't hit any notes.
Rosie Oakey.
That's it.
What is that supposed to
do? Well, instead of karaoke, you get Rosie Oakey. Oh. Your own version.
Oh, boy.
That's compliments to Scott.
Let's get back
by the way.
To the conversation here. We're talking Arizona geology with Michael Conway, Chief of the Geologic Extension Service for the Arizona Geological Survey. And we've been talking the last 20 minutes about fissures, but you wanted that one question answered. But I want to move the conversation over to the quake activity we were having just last fall.
Okay. I just was curious how much damage has already been done in Eloy. Are they already dealing with these things, broken under infrastructure and things?
Yeah, to some extent, there's probably been some damage there. I don't know that we know how much damage. We do know that in some cases where highways and other infrastructure intersect earth fissures, right now what they're trying to do is mitigate the problems. Highway 202 up there in the Phoenix area encounters fissures in at least one spot, and they spent hundreds of thousands or several million dollars, I think, preparing that one spot so that Highway 202 would not be disrupted by that fissure.
Well, that's a good
thing.
So
it costs money.
Oh, and
it costs money.
And then we had this sinkhole on the way up to Page. The road just got repaired. Jennifer and I went over Beeline Highway like 4 hours before that big slough outside of Sunflower put washboard ripples, 2-foot-sized ripples into the pavement.
Right.
I can't believe we didn't have any accidents when that slough came in underneath the Black Canyon City earthquake. The epicenter was just like a quarter mile off of I-17. Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's right.
And it was like 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning. You know, you're driving and you don't feel a 4.0 earthquake in a car when you're a quarter mile from the epicenter.
You know, you might not.
Really? Wow.
You know, the shock absorbers would take up a bunch. And it probably was felt more like a jolt. And so you might think you hit something in the road or there's a bad spot in the road. And you might not think much of it. I suspect the people that were sleeping at home in the Black Canyon area, they felt it.
They knew
felt
it.
Nice shaking for 15, 20 seconds. Yeah. They absolutely did know it.
When it happened, I actually reached out on air. I said, if you were driving in that area at the time of the quake, call me. My curiosity has just got to know. What did that feel like? I never got one phone call.
No, well, but there was that quake was felt. In fact, we got a lot of calls about it because it was felt widely throughout the Phoenix Basin.
Oh, it was. Absolutely. Now, let's talk about earthquake. We consider ourselves as builders, and I've been building here since the 70s. We've always considered ourselves a fairly static quake environment. Our seismic zone rating is fairly low. You know, we always worry about those crazy people that live over in that other state west of us, you know. Oh, man. But.
Yeah, no, it's a bit of an issue. We see a fair number of earthquakes in Arizona each year, well over 100. But fortunately, most of them are so small that they're not felt by anyone at all.
And we're planting more sensors, correct, than what we've ever had before.
You're absolutely right. We run the Arizona Broadband Seismic Network out of the survey, and we have had 8 seismometers out there since about 2009, 2010. Jerry Young and Phil Pertree, who Phil is our director and Jerry's our geophysicist, have arranged with FEMA to bring in 5 more sensors. So we're going to be doing a little better job in the next year or so of monitoring seismicity earthquakes across the state.
And that really could be setting a whole new baseline. I mean, we could be having activity we don't even know about until these seismic indicators are planted, right?
You know, you're absolutely right. And that was the case probably. We had that seismic swarm several months ago up in northwestern Arizona.
I mean, it was like
hundreds
in a week or something like that, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it was about 55. I'd have to go back, maybe 55 or 60 events within a week. And years ago, we would not even have known that swarm occurred because I think there was one felt quake among that. It was a 2.5 or 2.6. All the other earthquakes were microseisms. They were less than 2.5. We can detect them readily now, but 20 years ago, we never would have known it happened.
So that's up on the west end of Grand Canyon. And then we had another cluster down in Duncan. I mean, that in my mind, that's the each end of the Mogollon Rim.
Yeah, and the Duncan event was a more serious event. It was a magnitude 5.3 in June of 2014, I believe. And that was really followed because these larger events, and 5.3 is a moderate earthquake, it generates thousands of aftershocks. So there were thousands of smaller aftershocks. The vast majority are never felt, but there were probably several dozen felt earthquakes in the Duncan area. And we were in constant communication with folks down there trying to reassure them that this wasn't something new. We'd seen this before, just prior to World War II. I think it was 1939. There was a magnitude 4.5 or 4.7 down there. So this was not entirely unexpected. It's just that the repose period between larger or moderate events down there might be 50, 100 years, might be 500 years.
What's the largest recorded earthquake in Arizona?
The largest recorded earthquake is just south of Arizona in Sonora, impacted southern Arizona and central Arizona greatly, and it occurred in 1887, and it was a magnitude 7.5 event. So that's the kind of event you expect to see in California at a major event. We saw it here in Arizona, and all of southern Arizona was impacted in one fashion or another. So if we were to see an event like that today, there would be considerable damage, there would be considerable infrastructure collapse, and there would probably be some deaths and certainly a lot of injuries associated with that.
Wow.
Fortunately, that kind of event along that particular fault is extremely rare, but it does occur. We will see major earthquakes in Arizona.
This is so fascinating. I mean, when the Black Canyon City quake hit, and then Lee and I talked, and he says, yeah, Rosie, he says, that was a fault zone we didn't even know existed prior to this quake. That's exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. And we live in an area where the Basin and Range Province, which at one time was very seismically active, right, produced a lot of earthquakes over a relatively shorter period of time. Well, it doesn't do that much anymore, but it does generate earthquakes, moderate size, small, moderate, and larger earthquakes. It just doesn't do it with any great frequency like we see along the San Andreas system or the Imperial system in California.
Well, Michael, I hike Arizona a lot. I mean, a lot. And it always intrigues me. I need to know who at the Arizona Geological Survey could I talk into having come hike with me when I'm just hiking when I'm just hiking across the mountains anywhere, and I come across this mining activity, and I'm thinking, okay, like up
McDowell.
Well, the McDowell Mountains, yeah, of course, but I'm talking more like the Sierra Ancha mountains that we've hiked in through Pueblo Canyon and all. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is it? What did that miner with his little burrow and his little pick and his little shovel, what did he see that said, I'm going to spend the next 3 years digging an 8-foot diameter hole in this rock?
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, those old prospectors were pretty astute, and there were certain signs that they were looking for, and it could be something as simple as discoloration of the rock. If it's good, clean rock, if it looks really fresh and there's no alteration, no changes in color, well, there's probably not much mineralization. They were looking for really reddish or hematite-rich rock. They were looking for bull quartz veins. They were looking for indications that there had been some heat and fluids moving through that rock. And they had a pretty good sense of what sorts of things would perhaps accompany mineralization, economic mineralization, gold, silver, lead, whatever it might be.
I mean, you're talking heat and fluid, and when I hike any place above the Mogollon Rim, I mean, it seems like 80% of the northern half of Arizona is nothing but one huge, giant lava flow of one type or another, all the way from St. John's to
There's all those. That's right. There's the Springerville volcanic field out there. There's the San Francisco volcanic field. And those are smaller, those are small volume basaltic volcanic fields. They don't tend to be associated with mineral wealth like the big super volcanoes, the calderas that we see in southeastern Arizona. Most of our porphyry copper deposits are associated with old volcanic systems, 70 million years old or so, associated with the formation of these big caldera-forming caldera vents.
I wish I would have stayed in school and become a geologist. It is so. This is so intriguing.
You'd have made a good geologist.
This is just so intriguing.
It's that inquiring mind. We hike, and he's always like, "Well, how do you think that got formed, and what were they doing over there?" And
you
always
that's
wondering.
That's what it takes: is a curiosity about the world around you.
I mean, just
essential.
Just as you drive past Piestewa Peak on the 51, just looking at the grade cuts and the different rocks and the force that was put together to make that happen, and why are they striated vertically when they had to be laid down horizontally, and then why are there so many different colors? Oh, Mike, I could keep you here the whole 4 hours of the show.
Listen, I hope not.
hey, well, you
I
were up.
I have stuff to say.
You were up late last night at Kitt Peak. I know that was probably a blast. So, a geologist looking at the stars. Michael Conway, Chief Geologic Extension Service for the Arizona Geological Survey. I can't thank you enough for joining us this morning. You and I are going to visit again many times.
That sounds great, Rosie. We're happy to chat with you anytime.
All right. Thanks a million. That is so mind-bending. Pretty exciting stuff.
Lots to think about.
Quakes, fissures.
Exciting.
I wonder how much that has to do with the amount of rainfall. I would guess very little, but I guess apparently maybe some of those fissures are activated in a monsoon activity. I don't know. Whew! That was fun. Hey, one of the things I'm going to want to talk to y'all throughout the course of this morning is I've been tasked to assemble a database of you that have bought homes in the Maricopa County area that had been flipped, okay? If you've bought a home that someone had bought during the Great Recession, fixed up, and sold to you, and you've been victimized by a low standard of workmanship, work that was done out of code, or work that was done without a permit, Romy, how could these people start contacting us and piling in the data?
I'm going to say we should have created a special email for that so we don't get cluttered with her regular daily tasks.
The regular bot. Well, for today, how would they do it? And then maybe we can develop a special one because this is something we're going to collect over the next 6 months. If you've been victimized by a flipper or you've been flipped by a flipper, we want to know about it. We're gonna have you contact us. We'll know how. We want you to contact us right after we get back at this short break. We'll figure it out in the next 2 or 3 minutes. Hope you could stay with us. It's Rosie on the House, your weekend wake-up call.